Welcome back to another episode of The Mac Rumor Show. I am coming back at you from another bathroom, apparently, as Hartley just told me. This time it looks like, what, you said this was a shower curtain?
Yeah, I think so. Well,
I am actually on vacation this week, but never on vacation enough to skip out on a Mac Rumor Show episode for you all. So we, of course, wanted to bring you an episode this week. Try not to take weeks off if we can. And Hartley, you just got back from a great trip from the U.S. Unfortunately, we couldn't link up and do this live, but how are you feeling? How's the weather? Of course, I need to check in with you.
I am tired. It was a very intense trip, but always good fun being over in the U.S. And I have come back to a sunny English summer's day, so I can't complain.
Mm. I'm in the Carolinas right now. I don't know if you were in any North or South Carolina while you were here, but...
No, I've never been to those states, although I did end up inadvertently going to Virginia, which is the Mac Rumor state, so that was quite a novelty.
Did you say hi to everyone over there?
I can't say I did, but it was a novelty.
Weather update for those in South Carolina, specifically on the beach. It's been very bad, but we're making the best of it. It's just rain all the time. You know what else has been very bad? The iPhone Air. From a sales perspective. We did want to touch on, because apparently we're still getting the sequel. We're still getting an iPhone Air 2. But we wanted to kind of touch on the first iPhone Air. I would love to hear everybody's thoughts. If you're an iPhone Air user right now, drop yourself into the comments and let us know what you think about your phone. It's been almost a year since you've had it. And, you know, of course, podcast at macrumors.com. You can email us there and let us know your thoughts as well. But Hartley, I know you don't have one, right? But you've used it. You've seen a few people here and there have one. After a year, what are your thoughts overall? Just, you know, your thoughts on when you held one, used one for a little bit, and then just in general on the iPhone Air so far.
Well, I think it's kind of an interesting time because I think we finally reached the period in which we can look back at this device with a little bit more of a full picture in a more retrospective view, because it is 11 months since this device launched, and now we are closer to the launch of its successor, although that is not expected in September, than we are to the launch of the original model. And my opinion is that it undoubtedly is an impressive device, and it was very refreshing. I think it's easy to forget that now because it has been a pretty much a failure in terms of sales. But this device seems to have such a sort of perfect display size to my eye. It is so lightweight and pocketable. I really like the back glass combined with that polished titanium frame, which of course we've lost now on all of the other devices. It does feel very premium and really unlike any other iPhone, just in terms of ergonomics, pocketability. And I even think actually that the MagSafe battery accessory is very good, and I wish that it was available for more devices. With all of that said, why did it fail? And we've diagnosed this a little bit in the past, but I think it's definitely relevant when we think about what Apple is going to do with this in the future. But do you have any thoughts about the device now that we're coming up on a year since its launch?
I mean, obviously the biggest downsides to the device is just one being the battery. The battery life just obviously isn't up to par with the other phones, but even that, there's a couple of remedies. Obviously, if you're near a charger, just charge it whenever you can, keep it topped off, and then the little battery pack that Apple made specifically for it is pretty nice. It basically doubles your battery life. You know, you start off with it, you go through that battery pack, and then you basically have your full battery once that's done for the rest of the day, and that's pretty good. I use that. I use the phone a lot for the first few months. And I found myself needing it mostly on travel days, but I was fine on day-to-day use. And then just not having any other camera, which I rarely use ultra-wide. So basically, I'm usually a two-camera person anyways, but we've talked about this a million times. It would usually just be either telephoto or the main sensor. So not having an extra option there for an optical zoom is kind of a bummer. But honestly, I think one thing that bothered me the most is the fact that it doesn't have the same vapor chamber cooling and it's not made of aluminum. So at times it just gets really warm. And when you're switching back and forth between like something like the iPhone 17 Pro and going to the Air, you have the same premium feeling. You have a lot of the same hardware. I mean, it's running the Pro chip. So you're not losing anything there, but you do kind of lose that little like, oh man, this thing's getting hot. And like, it reminds you of the old times, which I'm really glad that Apple was able to fix it with the Pro. But then when you go back to the Air, you're kind of like, I forget. This is what, and it does degrade performance when your phone starts to get pretty hot like that, depending on what you might be doing. But overall, I really liked it, and it's a shame. I do agree with you. I think it's a really good size. It's a shame that it's probably not going to be around for a long time. I think this, if I had to put money on it, this is probably the last model. I mean, all signs are pretty much pointing towards that anyways. So it's a bummer, but unless Apple can turn it around with some drastic changes on the iPhone Air 2, I think this is kind of a one and done, which again, I feel like a lot of people who own it are going to be right along there with me. It's kind of a shame because it's a really good phone.
A few of the people I've spoken to that have used the iPhone Air since launch do not intend to buy again and intend to upgrade to an iPhone 18 Pro because of these reasons. So I actually think that the number of Air 1 to Air 2 upgraders will be far smaller than the number of people that move from an Air 1 to an iPhone 18 Pro, which is a shame because it is I think it will be a shrinking segment of the market. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom, actually. I think there is some reason for positivity here, mainly because I think the upgrades coming to the second generation model are very solid and do address the majority of the criticisms of the initial version. So we should probably go through those.
Yeah.
The first is the camera. So the rear camera, it will get two. One of them is expected to be an ultra wide. So this will put it on par with the iPhone 17 or alongside this device, the iPhone 18. No telephoto, which I do think is a little bit of a
bummer.
But the ultra wide is still better than nothing. It does provide you with a bit more versatility and at least then doesn't make you feel like you've got an inferior camera to a device that is considerably cheaper. It does make much more sense in the lineup. And I will say that Apple's ultra wide camera now is very good. I do use it now more than ever. Yeah. It's way better than it used to be in low light environments. It's far sharper, a lot less noisy. And I do find myself using it, especially say like over the past week when I've been traveling, I go to tourist destinations and I'm doing a lot more outdoor photography and I want to fit large landscapes into the image. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect time. Or when you take group photos and you want to fit everyone in the image. I have been using the ultra wide a lot more than I feel like I did on previous generations because it is just a much better camera now. Now, would I be happy to sacrifice it to get a telephoto? Yeah. Yes, I would, but I would be happier for having it there.
I was just going to say, I definitely used it more this last month because I've been to New York and now on this vacation and like trying to get images of good landscapes, but it's never like my first thought. My first thought is, all right, I want a standard wide, the wide angle main sensor picture. And then I'll kind of like zoom in for some things. And then at the end, I'm like, I might as well just do an ultra wide just to get the full, like, but that's never my first like, oh, I need an ultra wide. It's just there. So I have it. And I'm like, I might as well take it. And then I'll look at it later and see if I actually need this photo. Maybe I'm just weird though. I mean,
I agree. That's how I work. And those photos don't look as good. They do have some distortion. So it is inevitable that will be kind of the last choice. But in terms of improving this device and making it more appealing, I think it is an important step. I think it's interesting in terms of the design that it is going to be arranged horizontally along that camera plateau rather than looking like it does on the iPhone 17 where they are vertically arranged.
I mean, are they going to make the camera plateau thinner? Or is it still going to be
I wouldn't have thought so because it still needs to accommodate those lenses, which are near enough as wide as that plateau itself. So I can't see that shrinking. And they've got a lot more hardware to fit in there, so I can't see it getting any smaller. I mean, if they do manage to maximize that internal space even more, that will be incredibly impressive. It is already a very thin and light and very well-designed device. I mean, it is really quite innovative thinking to squeeze the majority of the technology that is not the battery into the camera plateau specifically, pretty much everything. And that is why there are going to be these other internal improvements, which won't be apparent from the exterior of the device, such as reducing the size of Face ID internally, because, of course, that does take up space inside the camera plateau to create a bit more space to add things like that telephoto, that ultra-wide camera.
Also guessing they're doing that for consistency's sake, since that's just rumored across almost all of the phones. Would the iPhone 18, the standard one, get the same kind of reduction in size? Or are there not as many changes in that?
I would imagine it probably will, but I think that it's this device that is necessitating that change, because the foldable iPhone, which inherits a lot of the engineering from the iPhone Air, is not expected to have Face ID. So the engineering requirement to do that comes from this device specifically. But in the long term, of course, that's beneficial to the whole lineup.
Okay. So the back will look slightly different, but getting an extra lens is huge. Again, I don't know that is the main selling point for me, but it is appealing to most people. They're like, okay, we got two lenses now. That makes it feel more premium. Obviously, you're just getting more for your money. What about the front, aside from Face ID, or just the rest of the design in general? Any new colors? I mean, I think that the colors for this year were always just different shades of white, aside from the black. The rest of them are all just different.
They are very pale. I mean, part of that is because it's titanium. The tip of the frame is titanium.
Yeah.
And it's trying to lean into a more premium aesthetic. So I don't think we're going to be getting brighter colors. There was a rumor about sky blue being replaced by lavender. So that's possible. But certainly, I think the other shades like space black and white will remain. We are expecting there to be a smaller dynamic island in line with the rest of the iPhone 18 lineup,
right?
Which I think will be helpful, because I don't know about you, but I do feel like the dynamic island is most obtrusive on the iPhone Air, because where it's so thin and that display is that little bit larger than the standard size Pro and the standard iPhone, it does feel just that little bit. Just like it encroaches on your display area a tiny bit more, even though, of course, it actually doesn't. But I think the form factor of the device lends itself better to having a smaller dynamic island. So that would be an appreciated change. And again, does just separate it from its predecessor.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I don't know how much a smaller dynamic, and again, this is like the Face ID. They all kind of go hand in hand. The reduction in size, I'm guessing, would be across the board. So I don't know. Is that enough to be like, you know what? I'm going to get the iPhone Air 2.
I don't think it is enough. I mean, these changes in the grand scheme of things are pretty small, but I think overall are significant. So one of the other changes that's rumored is that it actually will get lighter. And I don't know how they're really going to achieve that, considering that they're going to be packing more components in here and they're going to increase the size of the battery.
Yeah.
So I don't know what engineering is going on there. But if that rumor is true, that will be very impressive, because it already does feel incredibly light compared to the other iPhones. It's part of the best thing of using that device.
That is the biggest appeal.
And I think that would certainly encourage people to pick up this device in stores and take another look at it. So I think that is an important element, because if it suddenly got dramatically heavier, I don't think that would help this device. So to go in the opposite direction is certainly positive. One of the things that should help with that is improvements to the display technology. So they're going to make the display thinner while also making it brighter, which is part of what's behind the foldable iPhone's display technology. So you can see how it, again, has a lot in common with that device that we're expecting this year. And maybe that's an indication of how they are saving a few grams of weight, the same with this smaller Face ID component. So if they can just shave a few grams off everything that's there, I mean, I'm imagining this will also have the simplified camera control that we're expecting on the iPhone 18 lineup as well. A few grams here and there, it all adds up.
Sure. I forgot the biggest downside when I said it was the battery and the cameras. The biggest problem is price. So if it's still going to be continued, because I was just about to ask you, why did this thing fail? Like, I feel like this is a good phone for a lot of people out there. What held it back? And then I remembered, it's expensive for what you're getting when you could just drop down to a standard iPhone and get in some cases more, you know, cameras and all of that. And then you could also just go up for almost $100 or $200. I don't remember exactly what the price was. I think it was $100, right? Was it $999 starting price for iPhone Air?
I believe so.
And then $1099 for the Pro. So it's like, might as well just go up. And then you get three cameras, you get all the extra stuff that the Pro offers. And it's just like, why don't I just do that? It's really just a stepping stone to either get you to buy one other phone, or, you know, or the other, really. And obviously Apple wants you to go up in price and not down. But how do you think the upgrade program is going to impact this?
It's hard to say, because we don't know what the pricing of the iPhone 18 lineup will be. And when we've had these discussions before about the iPhone Air, we've been looking at everything through the lens of the prices from as they are today and as they were when the iPhone 17 lineup was announced. Now things are different, and we are expecting prices to go up in some cases, maybe quite considerably, where we'll have the Pro iPhone maybe starting at $200 or $300 more than it does today. And then you'll have the foldable iPhone at the top end over $2,000. That does change things and may push more people toward the Air over that cycle, because $100 difference isn't enough. But $300, I'm pretty confident that it would be. And especially if some of these issues that I think particularly the biggest one is the camera difference. I think a lot of consumers would look at an iPhone 17 and an iPhone Air and say, why does the 17 have an extra camera but the Air doesn't? Because it's something that even people who are not into tech can hold the two devices in their hand and it's really apparent. And it's just obvious that this thing has an extra camera and this thing doesn't, but it's cheaper. The minute you get two cameras on the Air, I think that you shut that possibility down, because other stuff like the speakers, again, you're not going to notice that so visibly and so obviously just in your hand at the Apple store. So I think that's a slightly less concerning problem from a marketing perspective. So it may well be that by the time we get into the iPhone Air 2's sales cycle, this may attract some more buyers. I don't think there'll be first-time buyers. I don't think there'll be people that bought an iPhone Air 1, but people who are upgrading from an older device who maybe would have ordinarily have gone up to a Pro, but now a Pro is too expensive, may find an Air 2 much more appealing, especially if Apple can lean into marketing this device correctly, which I also think is part of the Air 1's problem. It was initially, I think, quite well presented at the Apple event as being something different, and it felt quite exciting. But I feel like almost instantaneously, it just vanished from marketing. It was not on billboards. It was not in ads. And it felt like Apple did not really know how to talk about this device. Mm-hmm. I think that what it would have benefited from doing was talking about it as a much more high-end and luxurious device, which it didn't really do.
I mean, yeah, I wonder if Apple's struggling to kind of market it that way when it is, you know, from a camera perspective, not as luxurious as some other phones, especially ones that might be a little bit cheaper and you're missing out on a few components. Like, I don't know, they could have still done that. They're probably going to do that with the iPhone Ultra, considering what the name is going to be. But it's, in theory, in some ways, it's not going to be better than the iPhone 18 Pro or whatever at that time in some areas. But they can still market it that way. I don't know why they didn't do that. It almost kind of feels like they presented it. Here it is. This is this sleek looking thing. It's new. And then they just never talked about it again. Like, that was it. Figure it out if you want to buy it or not. Commercials do you see for that phone specifically?
Almost none. I don't know that I've ever seen one, in fact. And it really does feel like it vanished. And I think that's because Apple knew that it wasn't going to sell enough to be worth those ads. And compare it to the iPhone 17 Pro, which has sold stratospherically well. I mean, you really do see iPhone 17 Pros everywhere.
Yeah.
But the iPhone Air is such a rarity. But I don't know. I feel like they could have done something like give it some really unique packaging, and marketed it by giving it to a lot more fashion influencers, giving it some really unusual accessories. And
I mean, they did try to give it to those influencers. There's a lot of different people at that event last year where, you know, I'm like, who are they? I don't recognize them.
Feel like they could have gone further with that. I don't know that it would have worked or not. I mean, the device still has its problems in terms of its price point and its design compromises. But mm-hmm. I think part of the picture here is the marketing problem. And I think that it will help when this has a firmer position in the lineup in terms of its specifications and price. So I'm a little less worried about it, but I think that long term, the whole lineup is shifting. So, I mean, you mentioned that maybe this device won't exist a third time around. I actually agree with you, but maybe not in quite the same way. I think that this form factor will still exist. I think that the tooling has gone into it now. A lot of work has gone into engineering a much thinner iPhone of this size.
Just replace it as the regular iPhone?
I can imagine it replacing the regular iPhone, because
that'd be okay.
Where does the regular iPhone go over the next 5 years? It's very difficult to say. The price will have to go up, not least due to inflation, and now you've had all these supply constraints. So if the price goes up, but the price of the Air is coming down, then those are kind of meeting in the middle. And actually, if they end up getting effectively feature parity, I think that is a way that you could end up advancing that entry-level iPhone and giving it a better sense of purpose and actually positioning it a lot more like, say, the MacBook lineup, where you have the MacBook Neo, the MacBook Air, and the MacBook Pro. What if that ends up being the iPhone Neo, which would be like today's E model, the iPhone Air, and then the iPhone Pro? That lineup makes a huge amount more sense, and it works very well in the MacBook lineup. The issue now is that you've got an e-iPhone, which people don't really understand and feel is too cheap. You've got, in terms of its offering and its presentation, I actually think it's a great device, but I think a lot of consumers don't really understand it. You've then got the entry-level iPhone, which is outstanding and actually quite underrated. The Air that is squeezed out on its price point, and the Pro that takes the lion's share of sales. But if we go forward 5 years into that space, where at the top end you've got an iPhone Ultra, I think that with a few $100 between each device, it makes so much more sense than at the moment where it's only like $100 or $200.
Well, that's what I wanted to take a look at. So the iPhone upgrade program currently for the 17 lineup, we'll include the E in there. You have the E that you can lease for 24 months. We'll just stick with 24 months for the whole thing. Get that for $18. You can get the 17 for $23. You can get the iPhone Air for $29 and the 18 or 17 Pro for $32. Out of those four, which one would you be more inclined to go with and why, from a price perspective and all that?
I mean, I'm a biased party, because for me, it would always make sense to go for the Pro with the battery life and with the cameras. To me, that is pretty much worth it for, I don't know, 50% of consumers. And the other 50%, I don't know, maybe the other 40% should go for the entry-level iPhone, and then the remaining 10% should go for an E model. But it's very hard to recommend an Air pretty much to anyone at the moment.
Okay, so here's another perspective. Just curious to see what you would do. Because I know you're an avid Apple Watch person, let's just say, for the sake of your budget, and this might be a real situation for some out there, so you could help them. You can only afford either an iPhone 17 Pro from a monthly lease, or let's just say your budget allows for you to be able to do one of the other three phones and an Apple Watch. So your option is Air, regular, or E, and an Apple Watch, or no Apple Watch and a Pro. Which one would you do then?
For me personally, I would still go for a Pro iPhone.
Okay, no Apple Watch. See, that's telling.
But I think that there's probably a decent number of consumers where it is worth getting an Apple Watch, where if you are in a kind of, maybe in your day-to-day professional life, you can't always be glancing at your phone, and it's helpful to glance at your Apple Watch notifications, or you do a lot of sports, things like that, where you don't have your phone with you. Maybe you're buying an Apple Watch Ultra and you are one of these people that goes out adventuring into the wilderness and you want those features, or I don't know, you're a swimmer, there's plenty of people that would benefit from that. And even people that really do love activity rings or take advantage of the fitness features. Now, I, in recent years, have actually moved away from the Apple Watch a little bit. Actually, I think I tweeted that this last trip I went on was the first international trip where I just did not take my Apple Watch with me. I took a mechanical watch instead. And it's because I wanted to disconnect for a little while. And I didn't actually want my Apple Watch pinging at me all the time and to have that temptation to go and look through my notifications. So I don't know if that's probably just me. But considering that I appreciate the camera on the iPhone almost more than any other feature, that is just what comes first. But there are certainly many people where it would be worth buying an Apple Watch. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I would probably do the watch and I'd probably just go standard 17, which is bad news for the Air. And I really like the Air, but I think I just don't need to spend the extra amount of money where I can just get the two cameras. And I really like the way the 17 feels, and I think it's perfectly fine. And I use my watch a lot, especially during summer activities outside. So I just don't know that I could give it up. Like I need it for, I'm just going to come out and say it. You guys are going to roll your eyes. I need it for golf. So like it tells me my yardages. It's an important tool. Like I don't want to go back and get my phone. That is my like 4 hours during the day when I'm out playing that I am kind of disconnected because I'm not constantly looking at my phone. I'm not doom scrolling. I'm not answering messages. The only reason why I would use technology out on the course is to help me with the game. It has nothing to do with anything else. And that is like a refreshing thing for me during that time. And I guess I could probably play without it, but it is very convenient to just have that information on your wrist. And so I'm guessing a lot of people out there maybe use their Apple Watch as like a sort of way to disconnect. So they're not just constantly glued to that screen, but they still have access if they need it. And so I think they'd probably rather just sacrifice going for the main phone and could pick one of the others, but then it all still comes down to what would you pick? Would you go for the cameras? And, you know, so I think the Air is just in a tricky situation. I don't know. I hope it stays around as like the standard iPhone like you think, or this would be a good time for Apple to introduce the other foldable and just fold that up. Like it would be the perfect size, wouldn't you think, to make a clamshell foldable?
Quite possibly, if they could keep it equally as thin. And I think it would then be a much more unique device, which is part of what it struggles with, that it is unique, but not for the right reasons at the moment, what with it lacking that camera. And I do like some of the other ways in which it differentiates itself, like the titanium frame. It definitely does feel very different in the hand owing to its lighter weight and thinner design. I really do like it, but it just isn't enough. But if they are able to debut it with dramatically better battery life, maybe even than some of the other iPhones that are available, like compared to the entry-level iPhone, what if it actually does have a better camera and it's much more powerful and it runs much cooler and it lasts longer, it's lighter, all of these kinds of things, if you can draw more points of comparison where you can say it is a step up, then it does start to feel like a premium option in between the entry level and the Pro, which I think there is space for because that's kind of what the MacBook Air is right now. The MacBook Air is a huge advancement over a MacBook Neo. I mean, there's almost no comparison the extent to which that is a better device. It's thinner. It's more powerful with a full M-series chip. You can get higher memory configurations. It's available in more kind of premium, subtle finishes. You've got stuff like MagSafe charging on there. There's so much. I mean, it really is a really long list of differentiators. And yet still a Pro is so much better than an Air. Yeah. And that's why that lineup works. And that's what needs to happen with the iPhone here. And I think that there can be a middle iPhone. It's always going to struggle to some extent. It's never going to be the most popular iPhone. I think that pretty much always that high-end device is going to be most popular. I don't think the Ultra will be, but certainly for the foreseeable future, that Pro and Pro Max are going to dominate sales. They're too tried and tested and offer such good cameras, battery life. they're too compelling. But I think in the long term, over the next 5 years or so, if Apple sticks with this, I'm reasonably confident that they can carve out that space, especially if the pricing difference just does increase as well, where we end up with an iPhone at maybe it will be $700, $1,000, and $1,300, and then, I don't know, a Pro Max at $1,400. If that's the way that that ends up looking, I think that will make a lot of sense, and you could end up upselling a lot of standard iPhone users that just want that little bit more of a premium look and a larger display that right now would just go straight to a Pro. So part of it's down to price, part of it's down to specifications.
I think a lot of it's down to price. Like, I would love to hear from everybody. If you're still with us right now, just let us know. Like, if the lineup went like this, so 17e, 429, standard iPhone 17, let's say 649, iPhone Air 799. So that takes over that price. And then the Pro is 999. Like, there's a bigger gap there. Which one would you guys pick? I think the Air would become so much more appealing if it was at the same price point as what you get with the... And I mean, like you said, one day it might actually be that way because it could take over the form of the 17 or the standard iPhone. So, you know, 19 at that time, probably moving forward, or whatever they decide to start calling this iPhone. I don't know. I think it would become way more appealing. Or it could be cannibalized by the cheaper iPhone still, or even the entry-level iPhone, which I'm guessing, in my mind, that's what E stands for,
just I mean, entry-level. There has to be some change in the iPhone lineup over the coming years. Yeah. Apple's reset things before, and for example, you know, the iPhone lineup was ambling along, and then it introduced the Plus model, and then we got the iPhone X. The price of the upper limit of what an iPhone can be went to $1,000, and everyone was incredibly shocked. Then we got the XS Max, and it went even higher and with an even more large premium device. And everything has shifted upwards. But gradually, what's at the bottom end of the lineup has kind of disappeared or changed. And when it moved to the iPhone XR, that was a complete reimagining of what an entry-level iPhone should look like. And then we went back to a numerical system that was a little bit more recognizable with the 11 Pro. And now we're looking at an iPhone Ultra being added at the top end of the lineup. With all of that in mind, and now with the iPhone lineup effectively going to be bigger than ever, I think it is inevitable with rising prices that more devices get added at the top end or prices go up and certain models start to disappear or amalgamate. Because as it stands today, or as it will be when the iPhone Ultra comes out, I think the lineup is too messy and doesn't work. But if we were in a world where we're onto the iPhone Air 3 maybe, or iPhone Air 4, right, and it really does have incredible battery life, maybe it even has the telephoto camera on it by then, maybe it's even thinner and lighter than it is today, and it is several hundred dollars cheaper than a Pro iPhone, I think that would be an incredibly popular device. I would certainly consider buying that over a Pro. And it also depends what happens with the Pro, because the Pro is expected to get this 20th anniversary redesign next year. Mm-hmm. Not everyone may like that. And there is every chance that if that device gets more expensive, thicker, and leans into having a much larger battery and prioritizes battery life over almost anything else in a very unique design, there's plenty of people that may just think, do you know what? I just prefer a normal slab phone. That's a little bit more familiar and certainly more inexpensive. So I think there is change that is inevitable. I mean, I think this is all ultimately because the iPhone lineup is very mature now, has been around for a very long time and has worked very well. And I think that Apple is starting to experiment with what it can do, which is not, I think it's the main reason why we're getting a foldable after all this time.
I was going to say, we haven't even mentioned what the foldable could do to this lineup. Did you see some of the numbers that are coming out of Samsung's camp with the new Z Fold 8?
In terms of sales?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredibly popular.
Yeah. Like, and this is, and I mean this respectfully, this is Samsung. So Samsung's very popular, especially, obviously, Android community. But I think if we had to do popularity from smartphones, I would imagine that the iPhone would win that in most, especially in the US market. So if Samsung is doing really well, and it's, they were obviously doing really well with foldables because it's kind of the only foldable you can get that's good. I mean, there's the Pixel one, which is fine, but I think people kind of go with that one first. So 1.4 million units sold during the pre-orders, which shattered what they were expecting. And they're expecting this to be three times, it's selling three times faster than the Z Fold 7, which is just wild. It hasn't even come out yet. I think it comes out in 2 days. So if that phone, it'd be only, and this is strictly because of the way they changed the form factor, which, as you all know, is very much going to be exactly what the iPhone's going to be for the foldable. I feel like that's going to, I think Apple's going to crush it. I said on this podcast that I think the foldable will fail because of the price point. I have every right to go back and say that I was wrong, and I think I'm wrong because looking at what Samsung, and now Samsung's selling theirs at $1,799 or $1,899, which is still pretty expensive. I think if Apple's like at $2,000, maybe $2,100, I think they'll still sell an incredible amount. $2,500 still worries me, though. I don't know how you feel about that. Just briefly before we end this, like,
I agree, and the Samsung's offering has surprised me, and I think that the foldable iPhone is expected to be in short supply anyway. So I think the perception with when that device comes out will be that it's very difficult to get hold of, it's very expensive, but the fact it's hard to get hold of suggests that demand is very high. And that probably will carry it through for the next 12 months, and I think it will have a positive reception. I don't think it will be maybe as much of a disaster as perhaps we've speculated on in the past. But that being said, it's still, foldables are still a very small part of the market.
True.
And I think the majority of people are still going to go for an 18 Pro.
I agree. I think if anyone could convince the majority of the, you know, the normies out there, which I hate to use that word, but like from a tech perspective, you know, we always talk about that type of person. I think if anyone could convince a small percentage of that base, who would strictly just want an iPhone just to have an iPhone, that a foldable is cool and useful, I think it would be Apple. And I don't know how the marketing is going to go. I thought they would do a really good job with the Air. I will have to say that they didn't. And in terms of marketing, if they do a good job with this, I think there's going to be, and they already started ramping up production, by the way. They've gone up to 10 million units now. Because they think the demand is going to be so high now. At first, they probably didn't or just weren't able to do that with production, but it looks like they're ramping it up. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And we're very close. By the way, that tweet from German really got me excited for a minute. And now looking into it, it looks like that was kind of a, you know, you might need to click the link and read the article a little bit more, you know, suggesting that there was, I've got people messaging me, which is why I brought it up. Like, well, a live event. I can read the tweet. It's slightly misleading, but an in-person, Apple gears up for an in-person iPhone event at the first half of September, asking retail employees to apply for a lottery to work the event. This is a retail event, correct? Like when the launch happens, most likely New York or something like that.
Yeah, so it refers to the in-person element of an iPhone launch, which of course every iPhone has an in-person element because people go in person to pick up their device at stores.
Yeah, so it's not, at least unless Skirman would like to clarify, maybe we can, I mean, there's 100 comments asking, what do you mean? Like, do you mean in-person live events? So I don't know, maybe he will clarify that. But I saw that real late last night in bed and I got kind of excited and then I fell asleep and didn't, I could have just asked him, but you know, it's not, I want, that was the thing. What did I tell you? John needs to come in and just shake it all up.
I will say that even though this has maybe been a little bit misinterpreted, I think there's every chance that we can get a return to, if not fully in-person events, I think partly. And I think WWDC this year was the most in-person Apple event since COVID. And even just the way that the event was shot and presented was so much more natural. It was, it was just far less polished. And they did have some in-person, like they had that in-person tech panel after the event.
Yeah.
I think that things like that may start to creep back in, where maybe it's still an event video, but maybe they'll do a Q&A after, and stuff like that, which is a step in the right direction. And I think they've got to keep things fresh. And eventually it is inevitable that keeping things fresh will mean that eventually, even if it's not yet, it will come full circle and we will get an in-person Apple event in the traditional way one day.
Where that is considered fresh, even though that was the way it was originally.
For example, let's say it's when it comes to Apple glasses. If Apple really wants to present Apple glasses as this completely new revolutionary product, even though it won't be, but if they wanted to trick people into believing that, if they were to use that event to be the first true in-person event at that point for 7 years, or I guess for 8 years, actually, at that point, that would be a huge deal.
I mean, you got to come out wearing them. You got to do the whole
exactly
play up to the
come
crowd.
Out wearing them. You know, give the get people to have hands on with this device in a much more candid way. Get executives seen wearing them in the real world, talking about the device. I think it builds a really different buzz around it. Now, that's not rumored, but I think that it is one tool in Apple's disposal that they really could do with using. I mean, I think the biggest miss for this was Vision Pro. Vision Pro's launch, looking back, was very anticlimactic because it was all just done over video and it was like, oh, okay, we've waited like 10 years for this product and now it's just, okay, that's it. It's just like a video of stuff like people meditating with a headset that you're never going to do.
And I do think a lot of like generally interested tech people, you know, that like maybe have a slightly higher interest but are not going to be, I don't know, going to the iPhone event, you know, like trying to apply to go to, like just people that are like, hey, after work, I want to check out some of the highlights from the event because I want to see what got announced and what I could be excited for later. You miss out on the crowd reactions watching a video. Like when I was at the event for the Apple Vision Pro, there was a good reaction to it. It was a lot of people, and even some of the little minor features that get announced, you don't hear the clapping and the cheering for it, which does influence people. Like if you were to watch it at home and you thought, oh, that's not as cool, but like you didn't hear any of the like cheering and stuff for it, maybe it might change your perception when you actually see it live.
I think a lot of it just comes down to authenticity. And I think that maybe consumers are increasingly more sensitive to authenticity than Apple perhaps has realized in recent years, because yes, a polished video is more watchable when you're at home. Mm-hmm. It's more palatable. It's more fast paced. But customers are also sensitive to what is real. And customers are used to major corporations marketing to them in very polished ways. And actually, I mean, part of the reason there's been such a rise in influencer marketing is because we believe that influencers are real, ordinary people that are just like us. They're not, you know, celebrities that are paid to say stuff. They are ordinary people that should give their real opinions. The same goes with an in-person event because people know that they can go wrong. People know that crowd reaction is voluntary. And if people are sincerely enthused about a device and Apple is confident enough in a device that they can actually stand there and talk about it and demonstrate it, I think that is not lost on customers. And one day they will come back somehow.
And you just do it what you did in the past. It's like a hybrid, you know. They say, we've got a next generation iPhone for you and we can't wait to show you. And they play the marketing video and then you cut to, I guess it'll be John walking out on stage holding the device and here it is. And then they talk about it more. And like, that's what they used to do in the past. It's fine. Maybe you can make it 60-40% live, you know, shot video and then some live demonstrations. But the live demonstrations help, and I think a lot of people miss it, but I don't know. That's where we pass off the questions to you guys. Let us know in the comments, and hopefully one day we'll get back to it. Maybe this year, the iPhone event, if I'm fortunate enough to go again, maybe there'll be more live in-person elements to it, although my guess is probably not this first one, but who knows. So let us know, and we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.